This episode is brought to you by Ursa Minor Outfitters. Folks, I'm absolutely in love with my Loon mug. It's handmade. It's an absolute piece of art. Whether it's at the office or at the house, people keep asking to check it out. If you're not a Loon fan, they also have other beautiful mugs for wildlife fans of moose, bears, and eagles. They specialize in products highlighting the outdoors and local pride through quality design by local artists. They've even started expanding into items beyond mugs, like apparel, dog accessories, and soon candles and more. They also try to partner and highlight other small businesses, and in some cases, forgo profits in lieu of charitable giving to help their community, such as the dog rescue. So check them out, ursaminoroutfitters.com, and enter promo code HIKESMIKES10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. And for our four-legged hiking partners, they also have a portable silicone dog bowl and also a sweet over-the-collar dog bandana. Go check them out, ursaminoroutfitters.com, and don't forget to enter promo code HIKESMIKES10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. Welcome everyone to the Hikes and Mikes podcast. I'm your host Ivan, and together we'll embark on a weekly journey connecting with extraordinary hikers from all corners of the U.S. and beyond. As a warm embrace of summer envelops the Northern Hemisphere, we've had the privilege of conversing with remarkable individuals throughout this season. Their experiences and adventures will leave you yearning to hit the trails. And on today's episode, we're heading back to Pennsylvania and talking to Layla about her incredible journey in hiking and backpacking around the Northeast. You can follow her on Instagram at layla.grace.adventures. During our chat with Layla, we learn about what it's like hiking in and around PA, her inspirational journey into backpacking, and some of her amazing experiences section hiking the AT in Pennsylvania. Without further ado, let's jump into this episode with our guest, Layla. Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Hikes and Mikes podcast. I'm here with Layla.
I'm excited to talk to her about all things backpacking, hiking, and a little bit about the American Perimeter Trail. You know, we always like to start off with our guests by asking them how they got started hiking and how long they've been hiking for.
Thanks so much for having me. I started hiking as just a child with my parents. We would go camping on the weekends and, you know, they'd take me out and we'd tramp around in the woods. And it was just something that has continued throughout my life. There's certainly been periods where I haven't really done a lot of hiking, but once I had kids of my own, it was something that I wanted to get back into. So started with just taking my kids out on those things. It was when they were little, a lot of carrying them. And as my life changed and I got divorced, I really got back into hiking. It was just a way for me to get some time to myself and reconnect with all of that wonderful thing that is nature and that quiet time. So it's really always been a part of my life. It's just kind of come in phases. And at this point in my life, it's just something that I do all the time. I absolutely adore hiking. It is my me time. It is my chance to get away from everything and just be.
Yeah, you definitely look happy on the trail. And one of the things that I definitely want to touch base with you is you do bring in your family and your children. You're getting them out in the outdoors and enjoying the same thing that you enjoyed as a kid. You're based out of the East Coast. For me, I haven't had a chance to do much hiking on the East Coast. How would you describe your hiking scene around your home base?
I'm based out of Pennsylvania, so it's rocky. lots of rocks. It is not a joke. That's most of what it is. There's not great hiking right by me. So when I want to go somewhere, it's at least an hour drive, but usually an hour and a half to sometimes even 2 hours. And a lot of people think that I'm crazy because I will get up on a Saturday and drive 2 hours to go on a hike, to turn around and come home. But that's what makes me happy. So I like to get out there. I'm usually in and around Pennsylvania, but I'll go up to Jersey or Maryland, up into the Adirondacks, depending on what it is that I want to do. Not overly steep, but usually fairly rocky and a diverse amount of, there's trails that I can find that don't have really a lot of people on them. And then I can get out onto the Appalachian Trail and it have it be packed.
I think that's one of the great things about the Northeast, especially, is that you can go a few hours in either direction and find some great hiking opportunities. When you do find yourself with a free weekend, what are some of your favorite hiking destinations?
That is a fantastic question, and one that I get asked quite a bit. My favorite hike, I have two favorite hikes in Pennsylvania, and one is very popular. It's the Pulpit and Pinnacle Loop that's part of the Appalachian Trail. It is a steep, challenging hike, rocky and pretty intense elevation gain. The views are fantastic. It tends to be very, very crowded unless you're going first thing in the morning or sometime during the week, but it's just a place that I am really comfortable with and enjoy it. And then the other spot that I really like to go is part of the Sand Springs Trail here in Pennsylvania that ends up actually connecting up into the Appalachian Trail as well. And it's this magical piece. You get on the trail and you're in forest and you're walking along the river and you don't actually feel like you're in Pennsylvania. I can't quite describe it, but the trees are different and the river is different that you're going along, and it even smells different in a sense. So it's this little magical place. It's not overly well marked and I've gotten lost on it a couple times, but it's just this wonderful spot to be. I do like going up to Delaware Water Gap and hiking around there. That's just a little bit of a longer drive for me, so I don't get up there as much as I would like.
One thing I was wondering, and you kind of mentioned it, that there's several little trail systems that connect into the AT. Is that something that's found throughout Pennsylvania, close to the Appalachian Trail?
There are some trails that connect in, but because of the way it traverses across the state, it really goes more east-west than it does north-south. It kind of makes this northeasterly curve through the state. There's not a lot that connect in as much as you would think.
And, you know, one thing that I'm excited to talk to you about, because I'm transitioning into this next evolution of hiking, but you've recently, in the last couple of years, transitioned into backpacking. And how was your first backpacking experience and how was it getting into that community?
My first backpacking experience, so entertaining. I was dating a lovely gentleman at the time who had thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail. And I had said, you know, I'm going to go camping this weekend. Do you want to come? And he said, no, how about we go backpacking? And I said, I've never been backpacking in my life. It's been on my list. So sure, why not? And we went through and, you know, went to REI and got gear, and he gave me a lot of direction on what to get, and shows up at my house and says, okay, you know, do you trust me? I'm looking at him like, I don't know what that means, but yes, I trust you. So he says, are you up for a challenge? Yeah, I'm up for a challenge. Sure. As long as, you know, that there's a way out or something. I'm just kind of looking at him. He says, okay. When we get in the car, we drive up, and I have no idea where we're going. Really and truly no idea. Not the safest of things to be doing. But we end up on the Appalachian Trail, and we're going up, and we're at the Lehigh Gorge and the Palmerton Climb, which I know nothing about. But if you know anything about the Appalachian Trail, especially in Pennsylvania, the Palmerton Climb is this infamous just rock scramble. So we're going up and we round this corner and there's this beautiful view and the river is down there and there's a rock wall. And there is just, I'm looking at him like, what, where is the trail? Where did it go? And then I see the white blaze halfway up the rock face and then another one at the top. And he's close to 6 foot tall and kind of just shimmies himself in this little corner and climbs on up it. And I'm 5'2", 5'3", in shoes, and there's nothing behind you. As you've come up across on this corner, there's just a drop-off. So one wrong move, and you're going to hit the dirt, and if you don't do it right, you're going over this edge. So I managed to make it up. I kind of froze halfway, and I'm just looking at him like, I can't believe I just did that. I've got this pack on my back, and I've been backpacking for all of an hour, I think, at this point. But it was great. You know, it was just, we get up to the top and he's like, well, I knew you could do it. because I had no warning that that was coming. And we just sort of continued on the trail and camped out that night and turned around and went back. And there's luckily an alternate route, but it just hooked me. It was so different than, you know, camping at a campground and that freedom of having everything on your back and just being out there was so different and so engaging in a way that I hadn't before. I knew it was something that I wanted to do again.
I'm not sure what the timeline was, but one thing that was really great to see is almost shortly after that backpacking trip, you decided to start doing solo backpacking trips. How was that transition? Because you're so new to the community. Was it a little daunting? Because just for me speaking, you know, from my personal experience, it's daunting knowing that I'm going with some experienced backpackers. I don't know when I'll be ready for solo backpacking, but I'd love to hear how you got involved in solo backpacking.
So after that first trip, I shortly stopped dating that gentleman and found myself with a little bit of gear and this love of something that just I wanted to go do. And I didn't know any other backpackers besides some people in some Facebook groups. I wasn't really a part of the community at that point, but I knew it was something I wanted to do. So I just dove in head first. That was my very first backpacking trip was May 2019, Memorial Day weekend. And then I took my first trip out by myself was Labor Day weekend of that same year, 2019. And I just thought it was going to be a two-night route out on the Appalachian Trail and arranged a shuttle and all of those things. I remember the shuttle coming up and picking me up and thinking, this goes against everything that you're taught. I'm getting into this strange person's panel car and they're going to drive me, you know, 30, 40 miles down the road and I have to walk back to my car. And I've never done this before on my own. I was nervous, but 5 feet into stepping onto the trail, everything fell away. And it was just this feeling of this is where I am supposed to be. And I just walked. As much as we talk about hiking and backpacking being this fancy thing and that it's walking. It's one foot in front of the other. And the mental piece is, I think, the biggest hurdle there is that's out there. I didn't even know on that first trip where exactly I was going to camp. I just kind of said, I'll figure it out as I go. I knew there were some shelters on the trail that, you know, where I had picked out, but I wasn't set on that. Luckily, I made it to a shelter area and set up my tent and just had a amazing time, despite the fact that I had forgotten to pack my sleeping bag. So I was a little cold that night.
Oh, no. You know, now that you've done solo hiking and backpacking trips, what tips or advice would you give to people that are interested in getting into solo backpacking?
The biggest thing I say is just go do it. Just go do it. It is going to be terrifying at points. That very first solo trip didn't feel like a solo trip because it was a busy weekend and there was lots of people out there. So I never really felt alone, never felt really lost or any of those things. The next trip that I took really pushed my limits on that. So I went from that little weekend on the Appalachian Trail, just ended up being a single overnight, to planning a 50-mile trip from Northern Connecticut up into Massachusetts, finishing up at the I-90 border. And that was a big jump and a big stretch. But for me, I've always wanted to challenge myself. So I think it's okay to make those big jumps. People are going to say all sorts of things to you. I know I had a lot of people saying, I shouldn't do this, and it's not safe, or I should go with other people. I should wait till I'm more experienced. But for me, it made sense to just jump in. And so I just advise people to jump in, push your comfort zone a little bit, but really know yourself and plan. Plan for whatever might go wrong. Make sure you have all of your safety gear and know that that first night, if you are truly camping solo in the woods and there's nobody around, it's going to be a little nerve-wracking, but that's okay. That's how you learn. That's how you get through it. And now I think nothing of it. It does not matter to me. There's no one around. I haven't seen anybody in hours and I pitch my tent and it doesn't bother me. I've just moved through it as I've gone through. at all.
Would you say that the first night was the hardest, like you said, a little nerve-wracking, but then by night two, those nerves were kind of gone?
They weren't gone, but they were certainly less. It's just a process. I know when I did my Connecticut into Massachusetts trip, that first night I realized walking into the shelter area, I was pretty terrified to camp by myself. And I didn't have to camp by myself. There was another couple there. So it made it that much easier for me just knowing that across the way there was another couple. But the second night there was nobody. There was nobody and I was stealth camping and it was definitely a little terrifying, but it just gets easier. Every time, to me, it has gotten easier. And I think it's just as you get comfortable with your setup and what you're doing and what makes a good campsite for you. So for me, a lot of the times when I was starting out was making sure that I felt like my tent was well protected. So backing up as close as I could to something. If it was Pennsylvania, there's a lot of rock walls and things. So I could put my tent kind of up to that or a denser part of the forest or something to kind of create this bubble of safety around me.
Oh, that's great to hear. Definitely motivates me to hopefully once I get this first backpacking trip to explore some solo trips this summer. National parks definitely draw the big crowds and rightfully so. And I believe, you know, the AT trail draws the crowds because it's well known. But one of the things we like to highlight, and I think Pennsylvania and just the Northeast in general, has a lot of beautiful state parks and national forests. What are some of your favorite state parks or national forests that you like to explore and hike in?
Oh, Pennsylvania has lots of state forests and a lot of state parks. I think my favorite state forest here in Pennsylvania is the Michaux State Forest. It's out southwestern PA, Chambersburg. Part of the Appalachian Trail goes through it. It's rocky and wooded, but not as rocky as some other sections. You get some beautiful overlooks out there. That being said, I also love north central Pennsylvania up at the Pennsylvania Grand Canyon and some of that out there. It's a lot more remote, so you can get up to those views and only see a handful of houses or only see the river from which you've just hiked up on that. Think of the names of most of those, but North Central PA is just lovely for all of that.
I'm glad you brought it up because one of the things we like to do on the podcast is do a deep dive into our guests' Instagram feed and pick a picture that captures our attention. And the one that captured my attention from your feed is the fire tower at the Pennsylvania Grand Canyon because of the name. Can you share a little bit about this unique place up in northern PA?
Sure. It's called the Pennsylvania Grand Canyon. It looks nothing like the actual Grand Canyon because it's all green and it's just where the river has carved down in between the mountains up there. So there's beautiful overlooks and there's state parks kind of on either side. So if you're on one side, you're in one state park. If you're on the other side, you're in another state park. It's beautiful views. There's lots of wildlife to see and you can hike down from one edge of the canyon. It's I think it's about a 2-mile hike to get down. It might be one steep to get down to the river, and then you can splash around in the river. You can actually cross the river, and then once you cross the river, you're now in another state park. It was a really fun adventure that I took my kids on camping. I think it was about 2 years ago now that we did that, or it might have even been last summer. I'm not quite sure when it was that we went. It was a great trip. And then on the north side of the canyon is where that fire tower exists, and it's out in the state forest, and just pay a little fee and you can climb up as high as you want in the fire tower. And I didn't make it up to the top. I don't typically make it up to the top of fire towers. It's on my list of things to accomplish. But the views, even, you know, a couple rows up were just great. It's all forest and those rolling hills and mountains that are the Appalachians that are so uniquely the Appalachians. People look at the Appalachians, I feel often, and compare them to your mountains out west, and they're not the same thing. But they have a whole different strength and pull and beauty and magic in them that you're not going to see in those west Coast mountain ranges.
Yeah, especially the canopy of trees and just vegetation that covers the AT makes it so unique compared to some of the more, not barren, but definitely less dense areas of the West Coast, especially like alongside the PCT. And, you know, we've kind of touched base on this, but you're a single mom who enjoys spending time in the outdoors with her kids. How was it introducing the children to the outdoors and into hiking?
They don't really remember a time not hiking or camping. When I was married, we took them out as babies. I have lots of memories of camping with them, with, you know, 1, 2, 3, and up to 4 kids all jammed into a tent at all ages. That's, we would go camping with our church group at the time. And so it's something they've just grown up with. And most of our trips and vacations now all center around camping. It is so great to take them out and experience that with them and see what it is that they like and what they don't like and what they're growing into enjoying. Our summer vacations, they love to go whitewater rafting. So it's something we always try to do. And it's just become a big piece of our family life.
Have you had an opportunity to maybe introduce them into backpacking?
My oldest daughter has gotten to go backpacking. I took her out 2 summers ago now, and I designed this sort of quintessential Appalachian Trail experience in Pennsylvania. Parked at a trailhead and went out and were through a forest and then came out from a forest into a field that kind of bordered a farm and did that. And then we had a road crossing and back into the woods and then some rocky parts there and ups and downs. And it was great, except for a horrible downpour, one of the worst downpours I have backpacked in. Just the trail went from being dry to hiking in a roaring stream. So it slowed us down, and it was quite an experience. And she was just a trooper. She put a raincoat on and we repacked packs and eventually made it to the shelter area and pretty much dried off by that point. At some point, day one, she got blisters. We turn around to go back to our car on the second day, and the blisters are just, gosh, making her miserable. And I remember thinking,
oh no,
she's either gonna have hated this or she's gonna have loved it. And we get back to the car and she is just all smiles. And when can we do this again? This was just she had such a good time, and bless her, because they were some of the worst blisters I have ever seen. And I don't know what happened. It was her usual socks and shoes, and her pack was pretty light, but she loves it. My youngest daughter wants to try backpacking, so I will have to arrange that for her. My boys, they might enjoy it. They haven't expressed an interest to go, so I haven't pushed them for it, but they're usually up for a hike. They often have AirPods in and a podcast going, but they enjoy going and seeing the views or getting into the water and doing a waterfall hike or a river hike and just poking at each other.
Right on. That's wonderful. Now, you know, we've focused a lot around the Northeast and Pennsylvania, but you've actually made it out to my neck of the woods. And, you know, this is, again, my personal opinion. People can disagree, but I truly believe Bend is one of the best cities for outdoor activities in the country, because it's not super big. It's not a metropolitan area, but you can do white water rafting, snowboarding, skiing, you know, rock climbing, hiking. How was your experience visiting and exploring Bend, Oregon?
It was incredible. I fell in love with Bend on my very first trip there. I had flown into Medford, Oregon, so that I could go to Crater Lake for a few days and then up to Bend for a few days, and didn't do much hiking or any of that. I really just explored the city and fell in love with it. Being on the river and experiencing the trails there and how incredibly friendly the town was, especially when it came to bikes. I am not an avid biker, but I biked all over the city and enjoyed it. And then on my second trip, the same thing, I unfortunately didn't get to enjoy a lot of the outdoor things, but I simply fell in love with the town. And I actually tried to move to Bend, and unfortunately that fell through, but I fell in love with it so much on that first trip that I said, this is where I want to finish raising my family and where I want my kids to be, because of that outdoor community and that outdoor vibe that I just don't have in the town that I live in right now.
Yeah, you know, Bend is just so unique. There's still pockets within city limits that, you know, are in the forest, and it makes you feel like you're not in a city, you're out in the wilderness. It's definitely one place that I love to spend a day or two, or, you know, if I'm doing a road trip, extend a pit stop there, just because there's so much to see, so much to do. And like you said, everyone's friendly. And oh my gosh, the food and drinks there are just unbelievable.
Yes, that they are. It was a lot of good eating.
One thing that you've been a part of over the last several years, and you've done some really great work with promoting the American Perimeter Trail. And we recently had Rue, the executive director of the American Perimeter Trail Conference, on the podcast. What was your experience building and developing and marketing the American Perimeter Trail?
I was a founding member of that. I still am a founding member of the American Perimeter Trail. I connected with Rue via Instagram in December 2019. He had posted about a back injury, and I am a physical therapist by trade. And I reached out to him and said, you know, hey, how can I help with your back injury here? Happy to offer you some advice. And we connected that way, and I coached him through his back injury, and we stayed in touch a little bit. And this voice in my head said, this guy needs help. Like, he needs help. And it just kept going in my head. And so I finally just sent him a message and said, hey, you know, you're doing this incredible thing. Could you use some help? And he wrote back and said, you know, maybe, I don't know, but I can't afford to pay you. I can barely afford to pay myself. And I said, I'm not looking to get paid. I'm just offering, you know, I'm not sure what I can do, but we could figure something out. And come early January 2020, we finally managed to connect. And I will never forget that phone call. I'll never forget that night. It was such a turning point. You know, I had a lot going on in my personal life that day, and my phone rang, and this strange Oregon number pops up, and I'm like, oh, it's that guy, Rue. I can't talk to him. I can't do it. So I ignored it. And then he calls back like 20 minutes later, and I'm like, all right, I got to pull it together and talk to this guy. Like, I offered to help, and I get on the phone, and the first few minutes are kind of a cross between a job interview and a blind date. And within 5 minutes, we were just chatting and laughing like we had known each other forever. And it really just started from that point. So he gave me access to doing social media. And that was where I first started with them. And it wasn't even them, it was really just him at that point. So it went from just Rue to Rue and I for months. And it was the American Perimeter Trail project. I got him arranged with podcasts, and I built up the website, and I got a logo and a brand, and really started pushing all of that. And you know, we all know what happened in March 2020. We had COVID hit, and he had to navigate, was he going to stay out? Was he going to go in? And just what was going to go on with that, and fundraising. And we did build Amazon wish lists and all of these things. And I became his rock for all of that. And we brought on somebody, gosh, early fall of 2020, and the two of us, her wonderful woman named Dani, and the two of us pushed Rue to turn it into a nonprofit, because we said there's just some advantages to doing that. So I was with the American Perimeter Trail before it was a nonprofit. I was one of those signing members there that made the initial push to have it turn into a nonprofit. For the past, you know, 3.5 years, it has been a huge part of my life, sending resupply boxes and building out the website and helping build out the new website, managing social media, going out on hikes and building our membership base, and just enmeshing myself in an entirely new hiking community. It was such a joy and an honor to be a part of all of that.
You know, we do the deep dive with Rue on his episode about the American Perimeter Trail, but for listeners, can you kind of give a teaser, or what they say in business, like the elevator speech of what the American Perimeter Trail is? Because it's fairly new. I know it's getting more national attention online, but for those that aren't aware, can you share a little bit about the trail itself and its history?
Sure. So the American Perimeter Trail is a 14 some odd thousand mile trail that makes a loop around the perimeter of the United States, and much in the ways that the Appalachian Trail Conservancy and the Pacific Crest Trail Association and the Continental Divide Coalition, those are all conservation organizations. The American Perimeter Trail Conference is also a conservation organization, and the goal is to create that protected corridor of land around the United States so that everybody can get out there and enjoy it, that our wildlife has a safe space, and to preserve and enjoy the land and the resources and the water and all of those wonderful things that are out there. So it's more than just a hiking trail. It is an incredible community. I can't even tell you at this point how many states that it goes through. And it was the brainchild of Rue McHenrick, and I had the honor of kind of working with him on that. But it starts and ends in Bend, Oregon, but really you can pick it up in most of the states around the perimeter there.
Yeah, it's something unique. And I know that Rue was the first one to complete it. And there's other people that are scouting and doing sections of it. So it's exciting to see where it goes.
It is incredible to see it go from an idea on a napkin to what it was, to be a part of that and see how it changed and evolved just in the last 3.5 years has been an amazing experience. If you go over to the YouTube channel and look at some of the celebratory videos from the 1 year anniversary and the 2 year anniversary, part of those videos has the progression of the map to see where it started and how it changed. And it amazes me just to see, and I lived it. I was there creating the maps as it went. And then now just to see kind of how far it's come and how we've been able to turn it into this reality from just this big concept and goal and dream to something that is so much more tangible has been amazing.
Truly amazing to see. And I imagine being from the start to where it is now is something else to experience. Because like you said, started from a napkin and now to seeing it on NBC nightly news is something else.
Right. It really is. It is. I'm so happy that they've made the progress that they've made.
One of the things I'm always curious about, especially with day hikers and backpackers, is sometimes the post-hike meal is the reward for some of these grueling hikes that we go on. Is there a favorite post-hike meal that you enjoy after you finish backpacking or hiking?
I don't have a set one. I did probably the first year or so, I would love after a backpacking trip, nothing more than to go to the local brewery and get a big burger and a beer and just enjoy all of that. And now I'm not doing that as much. I honestly will often figure out what I can, you know, kind of have DoorDash to my house so that, and have it timed so I can get home, unload the car, take a shower. And by about the time I'm done with my shower, my food is sitting at the door. It's not anything specific anymore. It really just varies kind of what I was craving on trail, but I'll even find myself craving food on trail. And the minute I get off trail, I just don't want it anymore. It's funny. I will be thinking about Starbucks vanilla frappuccinos, for instance, the entire time I'm out backpacking. Okay, the minute I get off, I'm going to go swing by a Starbucks and get one. And I get into my car and I'm like, nah, I'll just go get a Gatorade.
Yeah, it's sometimes like that. You know, you have that craving on the trail. And then once you get closer and closer to it, you're like, yeah, I'll pass.
Yeah.
One thing I'm curious about, and I'm actually going to be testing out a couple different brands next week. What's your favorite on-trail meal?
So I do a lot of recipes from Backcountry Foodie. I adore Erin and Backcountry Foodie. She was instrumental in helping Rue, and the food is just fantastic. Her spicy peanut noodles and the pad thai and the oatmeal, funny enough, the oatmeal in the morning are some of my absolute favorite things. If I'm buying something commercially, Alpen Fuels caramel apple granola for breakfast is just fantastic. It's almost a dessert. It's sweet without being overly sweet. It's just one of my favorite things. And then there is a chicken mole from, I think it's Heather's Kitchen, based out of Alaska, that is, it's got enough heat that you're in a really flavorful, really intense, and it's pretty calorie dense and light. It's one of my favorite things to purchase and eat.
Oh, I have to check that out, because most people are saying there's these unique smaller brands that like these great chefs are creating these meals. It's a little bit more expensive, but the taste is there compared to some of the more commercially available brands that you see at REI or other locations.
That would be true. I love going to Garage Grown Gear's website and seeing all of the different food options they have there, because they have such an assortment of those small cottage companies when it comes to that. So that's where I tend to order most of my food from. And I do pay more, but I feel like it's worth it. And I like supporting small businesses. That is something that's really important to me.
Oh, that's a good idea. I've bought some like smaller items from there, but I didn't even look into their food options. That's a great idea.
Yeah, and they have sales occasionally. And I think there's also by Heather's Kitchen. They're called Packaroons. And they're these macaroons that are just little desserts, but they're pretty calorie dense and they taste great and they're light. They're a lovely dessert to take backpacking. My kids love them. Oh. Like they love those. So they're usually something I give them at, you know, Easter or Christmas.
Those Packaroons sound good right
now. They are really good.
One thing that I like to hear, because backpackers, I feel like not all of them, but some of them, especially when they're first starting off, they have a few or maybe just one luxury item that they pack. Do you have a luxury item that you tend to take on trail?
I guess I would consider my Kindle my luxury item. I don't take it every trip. I take it a lot of my trips, though. And that's probably it. I am a pretty minimalist person when it comes to backpacking. People are always surprised when they find me out on trail, especially for a 3 or a 4 day trip or something. I have a 35 liter pack. And for the most part, that's what I've really used over the last 3 some odd years of doing this. I just recently got a bigger pack, but that 35 liter pack has served me so well. I just don't take a lot of extra stuff. So probably my Kindle is my most luxurious item that comes with me.
I like that, because that is something that I've been debating, because I have a few books that I'm reading right now and I'm like, should I take a book on the trail? And then it's like, but the Kindle would save it. It's lighter than some of the hardbacks that I have. So I'll definitely have to consider that.
I like the Kindle. I've taken paperbacks occasionally, but the Kindle is just that much smaller, that much lighter. I just have to make sure wherever I put it in my pack, it's, you know, somewhat water protected just in case.
So you've done some amazing hikes and backpacking trips. Have you ever had a close call on or off the trail where it's either Mother Nature threw a curveball at you, like the rainstorm that you were engulfed in, or maybe an unexpected wildlife encounter? Have you had any of those type of close calls on the trail?
Not exactly. I've had some odd human interactions. When I did my first big solo backpacking trip where I went from Northern Connecticut into Massachusetts, my last night on trail, I got to the shelter area and all I wanted was to sleep in the shelter because I didn't want to set my tent up. I was so tired. And I was told that the shelter was being reserved and that there was not space, even though there was just one person in there. And I didn't know backpacking etiquette at that point. And I didn't know shelter etiquette. And I was just... okay, I wasn't overly happy about it, but just too tired to argue. And I set my tent up and just, you know, started cooking my dinner in front of my tent like you always do. And this woman who's set her tent up across from me is telling me, well, I can't cook there. I can't cook in front of my tent. It's not allowed. And I'm just looking at her like, what do you mean it's not allowed? It doesn't matter. I'm just going to cook my food. So I'm just ignoring her. And she walks over and she takes my stove and walks off.
Oh, no.
Yeah. She was determined that I could not cook there. So she set me up in front of the shelter. So apparently in her mind, it was okay to cook in front of the shelter and not just our tents. It was the strangest thing I've ever run into. And I was so surprised that it happened. I didn't even know how to react. And the more I tell the story, the people are just like, I can't believe that happened. I would never. People thought I'm kidding. I'm like, I'm not. She walked over. I was cooking my food and took my stove.
Oh my goodness.
And just walked off with it. So it was a very interesting time when it comes to that. And
yeah.
Let's say it was the next morning. That trip was filled with so much. I learned so much about myself and about backpacking on that weekend. The next morning, I headed out of camp, and I don't know how many miles it was into the trip, but or into that day, actually, I just was, you know, stepping down from one rock to another and planted my poles, and my foot went down, and foot went one way, body went the other way, poles went another way, and just, twisted my ankle and was like, oh, that really hurts, and hiked out on it and ended up just sitting at a road crossing because my ankle hurt so bad. And I was just like, I've got another, you know, however many miles to get to this point. And then the next day, because I had a pickup that I had to get to because I had to be home at a certain point. If I wasn't going to make miles, I wasn't going to make my times, and I wasn't going to have it all fall into place. And just sitting there with this, you know, sprained ankle at a side of a road, and I had a set of trail angels that came and just, they happened to walk by. So they helped me figure out kind of where I was and try to get a hold of my ride, and could my ride come get me early. And then this trail maintainer showed up and shuttled me down to a better spot so my ride could come get me at a new place. Not so much wildlife encounters. I've seen black bear and I've seen deer and all sorts of things, but nothing, so much of that big trip was so memorable.
Oh, that's great. I mean, harrowing story, but great that trail angels and the trail maintenance person were able to help you out. That's what I love about the community is sometimes you'll get those people that will take your stove, but then the majority of them will help you out. And if you're in a pinch, you know, help you out in those situations. So that's really great to hear that, you know, you had some help along the way. We're halfway through the year. We're officially in summer. Do you have any upcoming hiking or backpacking goals for the remainder of 2023 and beyond 2023?
I don't have any for this year. I attempted the Black Forest Trail earlier in this year in Pennsylvania, and I'd like to get back and actually get that done. It's a 42-mile loop in Pennsylvania that's pretty challenging. There's a lot of climbs, a lot of drops, and 42 miles is well within my range for, you know, a long weekend. But that elevation when I attempted it was really challenging given where I was at. So maybe to get that done this year. And I don't have anything officially planned out yet. I've hiked all of the Appalachian Trail in Pennsylvania, all of, you know, West Virginia and Maryland, and I'm starting to chip away at New Jersey. So maybe to get through all of New Jersey this year. Eventually, okay. I'd like to do a through hike on the Appalachian Trail or the Pacific Crest Trail, but those are a ways away with my life right now. So
I'm excited to, you know, continue seeing the great pictures that you post of even just day hikes. And it's great that you're sectioning off the Appalachian Trail, because that's definitely something that has captivated my imagination lately, is if I could just section off Washington, PCT Trail, and then do Oregon. And, you know, California's the big one, but I like that approach to just see if it's something that I am comfortable with to maybe down the road be able to do a longer through hike.
It's really fun to kind of do those little sections. You run into all sorts of different people. I've been out in all four seasons and doing it the way that I have. And I had never intended to do all of Pennsylvania. At some point last year, I realized I didn't have that much left to do. So I figured I would tackle it. Also because I was trying to move and I said, this would be a cool thing to kind of check off is that I've done all of this. But it's so interesting because despite the fact that you're on the Appalachian Trail, it's different in Virginia versus in Pennsylvania or Connecticut. So it's really unique to see how the trail changes, even though you're in the same mountain range the entire time. It's just different. The rocks are different and the trees are different, and so much of it varies within an individual state and then certainly between the states.
The AT is just so diverse from either end, you know, where it starts in the south terminus to where it ends in the northern terminus. It's a completely different landscape. And it's definitely something that is on my horizon as I want to explore more and more of the East Coast and, you know, see all those beautiful lookouts you guys have. That was it for the regular questions. This last portion of the podcast is the this or that questions. I'm going to give you two hiking related topics and you just choose which one you prefer out of the two. All set?
Sure thing.
So the first one is, do you prefer ascending or descending?
Oh gosh, I would say ascending.
And how about waterfalls or summits?
Waterfalls. Always waterfalls.
And,
then
when and I hear that Pennsylvania is known for their waterfalls as well. It's one of the secret gems over there in the Northeast.
Yes, there are a lot of waterfall trails around here. It's great.
Now, when it comes to the trails, do you prefer switchbacks or straight up?
I don't have a lot of experience with switchbacks. So my thought would be to say switchbacks. But I honestly don't know because the AT doesn't really believe in that, and neither does most of the state of Pennsylvania. So I'm used to just going straight up.
And then are you team trek poles or freehand?
Trekking poles all the way.
And this one's a new one, and it's definitely interesting to hear where people are at. But trail runners or hiking boots?
Trail runners. Trail runners. I got picked on 2 weekends ago for that. I was up in the Adirondacks and why are you out in sneakers? They're not sneakers, they're trail runners. And this is what I always backpack in.
Yeah, I'm starting to see more and more people switching to trail runners. And then when it comes to bodies of water, do you jump in or do you stay dry?
I am now at the jump in point. I didn't used to be, that just changed.
And then this one's a tough one, but sunsets or sunrises?
Oh, you're more likely to find me at the sunset than up for sunrise. I love a beautiful sunrise, but you're more likely to see me catching a sunset than a sunrise.
And then another equally tough one, especially there in the Northeast, but spring flowers or fall colors?
Spring flowers. I love my fall colors. They are so hard to catch, though. You have to time it just right. But the spring flowers are just this little surprise that you catch while you're hiking.
And then this last one is probably the most divisive one. But do you tag a hike on social media or do you not tag a hike?
I tend to tag hikes just because I'm usually on something that's already more popular. I think if I was on something that was a little more secluded, I might not. But I tend to tag my hikes.
Well, that was it for the this or that questions for folks interested in following your journey hiking and backpacking online. What are some of the places they could follow you at?
You can follow me on Instagram and it's layla.grace.adventures. And that's where I am for now. There's going to be a YouTube channel coming when I have some time to get it up and going. But for now, just come follow me on Instagram and, you know, please do check out the American Perimeter Trail and their Instagram and their YouTube and their fantastic website. You'll see writing from me there on the website. There's a lot of pieces that I've written for them. But
and we'll definitely share those on the episode show notes so people can check them out. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been really awesome talking to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that brings us to the end of this episode alongside Layla. We extend a heartfelt thanks to her for coming on the podcast. Make sure to stay connected and follow her adventures on Instagram at layla.grace.adventures. And don't forget to check out the episode show notes for all the important links we discussed today. We have an incredible lineup of episodes planned throughout the summer, and we can't wait to share them with you. New episodes will be dropping every Monday, with occasional bonus episodes on Fridays. To ensure you never miss out on any thrilling tales, remember to hit the like and subscribe button. Your support means the world to us. Don't forget to join our vibrant community on Instagram, at Hikes and Mikes. We'll be sharing episode visuals, my own personal hiking content, and so much more. Let's stay connected and continue to inspire each other on this remarkable journey. As we bid farewell, remember to tread those happy trails, embrace the great outdoors, and keep the spirit of adventure alive. Until next time, my fellow explorers, happy hiking. A special shout out goes to our incredible audio editor, Alex, whose exceptional skills and dedication help bring each and every episode to life week after week. Thank you, Alex, for your invaluable contribution to the Hikes and Mikes podcast. This episode's music was created by Ketza. Follow him on Instagram at Ketza Music. This episode is brought to you by Flip Socks. Whether you're on the trail, on the job, or in the yard, Flip Socks will keep Mother Nature out of your boots with their innovative nylon sleeve. You no longer need to worry about any annoying debris getting trapped in your boots during your hikes. Simply flip down the nylon sleeve over any boot to prevent Mother Nature from finding its way inside, keeping your feet comfortable all day long. To get your first pair, visit flipsockswithaz.com and enter promo code HikesMikes10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. And for listeners who use the promo code at checkout, I'll be donating 100% of the Season 2 promo code proceeds to Big City Mountaineers, who provide transformative experiences through connections to nature that strengthen life skills and build community for youth and disinvested communities across the nation. So if you're tired of bits and pieces of the trail finding its way into your hiking boots, pick up a pair of flip socks today with the promo code HikesMikes10 to get 10% off. For website and promo code, see the episode description.